This recording is from the ACA World Convention that was held virtually in May of 2021. The ACA World Service Organization is grateful to all who contributed to making this convention happen, as well as to all who participated. ACA is an anonymous program. Please respect the anonymity of those that participated in the event. To learn more about the ACA Fellowship, please visit us online at adultchildren.org, where you can find information for newcomers, as well as free literature for download. Information about doing service in the ACA Fellowship can be found at acawso.org and acawsoec.org. To purchase literature or to make a Seventh Tradition contribution, please go to shop.adultchildren.org. We hope you enjoy the following recording from the 6th Annual World Convention, Global Recovery, in May 2021.
Okay, so welcome everybody to the Discovering Your Inner Teenager workshop. My name is Bonnie M., and I am the chair of the Loving Parent Guidebook Subcommittee. I'm very excited to share this workshop with you. The inner teenager has been a really important part of my reparenting journey. Discovering that part of myself, learning how to support her, has really been very, very helpful. And I hope it's going to be helpful to you. So first, I just want to say that thank you to everyone who has helped this event happen. I know there's been a lot of people working behind the scenes to make it smooth. And we're all volunteers, so just really a lot of gratitude to you all, because I know so many people are benefiting from this workshop, from this weekend. And this is a really good example of how we approach reparenting in the Loving Parent Guidebook. This workshop will give you a sense of that. And it's kind of exciting to think that it's going to be coming out sometime in July or August. I'm hoping more for mid-July. I've heard things about August. It's totally out of our hands. It's with the printer. I'm hoping that it'll come in sooner than later so people can start working with it. But that's the date for the US. And then the Global Subcommittee is working on international launch with the Literature Committee and other parts of the board to make that happen. So I believe it should be accessible to people through an ebook soon, no matter where you are too, which is wonderful, at the same time as the printed book. I'm gonna just share my screen here, give you a little bit of a sense of the guidebook. You'll see the cover. And this is the cover on the left. It has the loving parent looking into doing mirror work and seeing that inner child, which just feels like the gentle approach of the whole book. And is that too big? Can my panelists tell me, is that okay? Okay, it just popped up bigger on my screen.
It looks fine.
Okay, great. All right, well, I like to just, I think I need to pause. It's been a busy day. I did a workshop earlier this morning on the guidebook. I thought it was very powerful experience to hear people share what they got out of a couple of the exercises that are in the guidebook. But I think I need to just take a breath. And I just invite you to follow along with me. If wherever you are, just tuning in to how are you feeling right now? Maybe some part of you might need some attention, might need some gentleness. We just had a beautiful meditation from David on forgiveness. And something from that meditation really made me think of reparenting. And he said, forgiveness can't be forced. And we can't force the loving parent into the driver's seat to do the reparenting. That's kind of counter to the whole process. It has to be something that is the loving parent is invited in, because otherwise we're probably coming from the critical parent or some other part of us who wants to move things along and doesn't have a lot of space for those wounded inner family members inside. So one thing I want to just say right up front is it's okay to take a gentleness break whenever you need to. What it says on the slide, those are reminders we have throughout the guidebook just really helping us tune in with our loving parents. So we're not pushing and we're following the pace of our inner, I like to sometimes call them inner people. What we're going to cover tonight is looking at this part of ourselves and how come they're still here and what is their wound about? And then how are they trying to help us? And then what are the ways that they can appear to us and present? And then how can we tend to them as our own inner loving parent? And then there'll be time for questions, comments, general questions also on the guidebook that I'm happy to answer. I want to say too, there was that morning presentation that went over the guidebook, and that recording will be available eventually with at WSO at the adultchildren.org website. So if you missed it and you want to see it, you can find it there in the shop. Okay, so it's 90 minutes and that's not a lot of time. So I just want to say this is about planting a seed. If you don't discover your inner teenager tonight, that's really okay. It's giving you some pointers in this workshop so that when in you're going about your daily life, maybe you will recognize like, oh, that's interesting. I was hearing about that. Maybe that's what this is. And then the invitation I just want to say up front. So this is a pretty big workshop. We have close to 500 people on this workshop. And so I just want to set expectations for sharing. We're going to pause and take comments from maybe 6 to 9 people over a couple of exercises. And it's not going to be possible to hear all of you. And we are going to open the chat during those times so that everybody does have a chance to share in that capacity. And there may be other times that I open the chat, but just so you don't feel disappointed, because I know you might not see the number of participants. Also, we're going to be asking you to use the question and answer feature for questions about Zoom, where to find handouts, things like that. And our panelists who are here volunteering will be answering those. But to just keep in mind, there might be a lot of questions for them, so they might not be able to get to all questions. I won't be able to respond to any chats during the workshop that are directed to me. And just ask that you please don't raise your hand until prompted. And then if you get triggered during this workshop, we are powerless over getting triggered. It's not like we set out to get triggered. It just happens. And that's part of our wounding, part of the trauma that we went through, different life events. So the invitation is if and when you get triggered during this workshop anytime, could that be an opportunity to invite that loving parent in to tend? Because then we move out of the problem into the solution and we can take care of that trigger. Okay, so I'm gonna ask that we open the chat, and I'm gonna open the chat myself so I can see it. I first wanna say we have these series of flowers in the guidebook. And these are done by Tracy, who is on our artist team. I just love the flowers. Okay, so the invitation is, if you're new to ACA, please go ahead and in the chat, just say new or something like that, just to get an overall sense of how many people are new. Okay, seeing lots of new. Well, welcome. This inner teenager concept, it might sound a little bit strange, especially if you're new. You might not have ever heard of it. I never heard of the inner teenager before ACA, but when I did hear of it, it was so helpful for me to finally recognize, oh, that part of me that wants to lash out and get the flamethrower and just burn things down. Oh, that's my inner teenager. It really helped. And then if you are new to reparenting in general, if you would in the chat, just say new. Hopefully we'll understand that it's both. Okay. Well, I'm very excited for you. If you're new to reparenting, it's changed my life and it's such a beautiful thing to discover. Okay, great. And then maybe we'll just pause there. It seems like there's a lot of people who are new to reparenting, so I'll try to keep that in mind as I go along. Although this isn't really an introduction, I will hopefully point a few things out for you. And then if you are new to the inner teenager concept, please write new. You could write new IT. That'll help me know you're new to the inner teenager. Yay. This was a very hard workshop for me to put together, even though I'm really close to my inner teenager and I love this work, but I just felt this pressure to get it right because it's been so important to me. And I eventually let that go and just decided I'd do the best I could. But I'm really excited to see so many people new to this. Okay. All right. Well, we're going to stop the chat there and move to the next part of the workshop. So this is my inner teenager. Now, we can have different flavors of the inner teenager, which I'm going to cover in a few minutes. But mine is angry, passive aggressive, and can be withholding. So I'm just going to give you a second to kind of take in the images on the screen. This one on the left, with the slamming of the door and saying you're welcome. That's just that flavor of saying something that sounds nice, but is really coming out of a lot of anger and resentment, frustration. And you can see with the other images of slamming the door, just that rage that can be there and that satisfaction of releasing it somehow. When I was 13, I had by that point been so fed up with the chaos and the dysfunction in my family that my only outlet, because I had been shut down from my anger, when I had expressed it to my dad, he was a rageaholic, he would come back at me. So I learned to not express it to him directly. I could express it to my mother, who was the codependent, but it didn't really do anything. So what I did was when I would get angry because of comments that were made, or I just was fed up of being put in these positions of responsibility, I would go to my room, and I also moved a lot. So this room changed all the time, but I would go to my room and slam the door so hard that the wall would vibrate. And it was this satisfaction. And I remember coming home after, I guess I'd been doing that for a while, and the door was completely off the hinges. My dad had taken it off. He wasn't home. And my mom said, he'll probably put it back on in a couple weeks. And I never, ever said anything to him about that being upsetting to me, because I moved into the passive aggressiveness and the withholding, where I'm not going to show you that you have hurt me or upset me. I'm gonna punish you by withholding. And he did eventually put it back on. And then the other we see with The Inside Out, which is a great movie, by the way, if you haven't seen it, it's this expression of anger just exploding. That can also be the experience of the inner teenager. And you'll notice the other character looking scared. You know, and that can be how our inner family members feel sometimes when the inner teenager might explode. So how come this part of us is still here? We can really think about it as we didn't really get what we needed as teenagers and as children. So this accumulation happened. And let me just get to the right spot here. Yeah, what I saw for myself too, and I experienced in the inner teenager, is there was not a separation of family. So I didn't get to individuate and have my own identity. So I was still in the rules of the family, what I should or shouldn't do. And hold on, I'm just gonna make sure. Okay, sorry about that. I didn't get a chance to really separate. Even though I had moved far away, even as an adult, there was still not a separation. And that lives on in the inner teenager for me. There's also the outrage because I hadn't been seen and heard, which is a setup for codependency. I needed much more love and care and direction than I got as an inner teenager. And I think that's true for these inner teenagers who live in us, the kind of this sense of being alone and trying to figure things out without healthy support. And I don't know why that slide says that about criticism, real or perceived. That's more of a trigger. Anyway, basically boundaries were also another issue of why we have a wounded inner teenager. Though teenage years were a time to test and establish boundaries, and we might not have gotten that. Maybe we grew up in a home with very loose boundaries, maybe too rigid, or some confusing mix. So these images that you're going to be seeing were created for this workshop from Jeannie, who is also on our artist team. And we have this whole idea of who's driving the bus. And it's kind of like, who's driving the bus of our awareness? Am I in my inner teenager acting out of those old coping behaviors? Or is my loving parent here and those inner family members are taken care of? So that's a lot of what the book focuses on, helping us tend to those parts of ourselves, but coming from our adult self and our loving parent. So in this situation, when the inner teenager takes over, they can numb, they can distract, they can check out. And they do that to get away from pain or unpleasant feelings. Sometimes when this happens, we'll see certain behaviors that come along that we'll go a little bit into further in a moment. But those behaviors have unwanted consequences sometimes. And we might procrastinate, avoid, lash out, use substances to excess, and then have consequences to deal with. So the inner teenager is trying to be protective and take care of the inner child by distracting them from what's painful, but it doesn't remove the inner child's painful feelings. They're still there. So there's that sense of the inner child feeling alone still, because what is really needed is a loving parent to take care of that inner child. The teenager is just not equipped for that job. They weren't given the skills. And it was really never their responsibility. They needed a loving parent at that time. So when the inner teenager is in charge, we might find ourselves engaging in outdated coping strategies. So any of those behaviors that we see on the screen, shopping, excessive TV watching, using substances, work, games, books, food, addiction to excitement, the roller coaster, or that lashing out, getting involved in drama as a way of distracting and a way of defending. The lashing out and yelling can be to defend that fragile identity of the inner child. So there's nothing wrong with these behaviors. We learned them and they were the best we could come up with at the time. They were ways to help us deal with feelings that we didn't have the skill to deal with. But when they're used compulsively, then they can lead to unwanted consequences in our lives. And the other thing is they keep the inner child at bay. So rather than the loving parent being able to connect and nurture that inner child, we get distracted. And in the guidebook, we have shares from ACA members. And this one seemed to really fit perfectly. This person is basically describing that his teenager made a deal with the inner child. I'm going to protect you. And then the inner child hid away, but then became kind of remote. And it like he said, it worked well. But then he says, in recovery, I discovered that to access my inner child, I needed to go through my inner teenager. And in the guidebook, the inner teenager chapter comes before the inner child chapter, because we see the inner teenager and the critical parent as protective inner family members, and they can block access to that inner child. They don't necessarily, if they don't trust us, then they won't allow for that connection, or they'll try to just not, they'll take the focus. So that's why we want to work with the inner teenager. Okay, so the inner teenager, even though it can sometimes do things that cause us these unwanted consequences, they really do want to help us. And the way that they're helping us is either they're focused on the outside, protecting that identity of the inner child by blaming, attacking, withholding, some of those things I described earlier in my example of slamming the door. Or they're going to focus inside, so protecting the inner child by judging the critical parent if they start to say something, judging us. You know, my inner teenager, if I do something, for example, I don't speak up, I don't advocate for myself, I say yes when I mean no, my inner teenager can come at me because it doesn't want me to abandon the inner child. Now, I can get taken over by parts of myself. For instance, the inner child can take over, and that people-pleasing can come out. So the inner teenager just needs some support, knowing that we're doing the best we can. I'm sorry that I wasn't really fully aware at that moment and in the driver's seat, but I want to be. The inner teenager also can protect by trying to distract and numb, as I mentioned before, and avoid. So the lack of awareness is really something that in the guidebook we talk about mindfulness. There's a whole chapter on mindfulness and helping us be more aware, because in order to catch those patterns, we need to have a certain amount of awareness. So it's a lot about awareness. If we're more aware, then these inner family members don't take over. Okay, well, why do we want to work with this part of ourselves? There are many good reasons. One is that desire that the inner teenager has to protect us, to protect the inner child, can help us be more honest and set boundaries for ourselves, really take care of ourselves, have a voice, be true to what we want and need, and to be real, and to allow ourselves to be who and where we are. And this little chart kind of helps explain how the inner teenager can go from a wounded, dysfunctional place into a healthy and healed place. So before, we see some of those behaviors I've mentioned before, the compulsiveness, the resentment, anger, into authenticity, directness, and the courage. So how do we recognize the inner teenager? This is again where mindfulness, being aware and present, can help us. We can tune into our body. We can notice how we're feeling emotionally, be aware of what kind of thoughts we're having. Are we blaming? Are we judging? Is there some part of us that's talking to us as if, you know, why did you do that? And there seems to be upset. It can take some time to distinguish between the critical parent and the inner teenager, but that comes the more you develop that relationship. It starts to get clearer. There's also something in the guidebook that goes over the differences. But then we want to notice too, another way of noticing the inner teenager is, oh wow, so maybe I'm overindulging, maybe I'm reaching for substances. What's really going on? Maybe my inner teenager is trying to distract or numb. And then we can get to know what triggers that inner teenager. So if it seems difficult at all to recognize the inner teenager, I think a lot of people have that experience. It can take time. It's not always easy because they don't communicate necessarily in the same way as the inner child. They might have a lot of distrust, for good reason, of people, of adults in general. So then they distrust you. And they really want action over words. They want to see myself, for example, as a loving parent, setting boundaries with the critical parent, and also then having boundaries with people outside. The other thing too is we need to kind of build their trust and make sure that the loving parent is the one who's connecting with the inner teenager rather than the critical parent, who can sometimes sound very reasonable. So we want to be sure it's really coming from accepting this part of ourselves rather than trying to change them or calm them down. Okay. I'm just pausing because I feel like I'm giving you a lot of information. And it is a lot of information. We're discovering the inner teenager. And just have a couple more slides before I'll show you some flavors of inner teenager, then we'll open it up to see what you're noticing for yourself. So some of the things that trigger the inner teenager can be when people behave in controlling ways or act as authority figures, when the inner child has those feelings that they want to distract from, new relationships, new work positions, new projects, things that can make the inner child unsettled and nervous can then also activate the inner teenager. They might try to avoid those situations so that the inner child isn't upset. Also, you might notice for yourself certain key needs. For myself, being seen, heard, respect, choice. My inner teenager really does not like unilateral decisions. She likes to be included in decisions if they're going to affect me. Having some autonomy when that is obstructed, that can be very triggering for the inner teenager. And when people don't seem to be real, so when our need for authenticity or realness isn't met, and accountability, that can be a big one. And I think accountability, when we were teenagers, I can say for myself, I really wanted people to come through and say what they were going to do, really do it. And when they didn't, that was just enraging. Also, a big trigger which relates to being seen and heard is when we have a sense that we're being criticized. Whether that's real or not, that will trigger the inner child. Then the inner teenager can get involved and want to prove themselves, want to correct the person. It can become quite messy. And then, like I mentioned before, when we have abandoned the inner child, when we have not honored our inner knowing, that can be also something upsetting to the inner teenager, who really wants us to be in our truth. Okay, well, next I'm going to show you some images again from Jeannie that show a few examples of ways the inner teenager can show up. Just like a real person, the inner teenager has many sides. So you might recognize all of these in your inner teenager, or you might feel some more than others, and you might have a different experience. It's also okay. The other thing I want to say about that is your own experience is what matters most. We're giving pointers. We're not the authority here. We're just sharing experience, strength, and hope that will hopefully point you back to your own experience so you can know for yourself. That relationship that you develop with your inner teenager is the most important, and it's very, very personal. Okay, well, this is that slamming door inner teenager. So can get defensive. It's almost like that fight reaction, rebellious, guarded. I like to joke that my inner teenager, she will get out her flamethrower. It's just that feeling of rage. This inner teenager does not trust people, and likely for good reason, because of past experience. They might see people as stupid, fake, dishonest, flaky, controlling, unhelpful, and then they might try to control in response. They are also what we call in the guidebook, the stubborn voice that rejects recovery behavior. I don't want to, and you can't make me. So they're trying to protect the inner child, but what they're doing is not really working, because as you can see from this image, that lashing out and the anger, well, the inner family members behind are having a reaction. The inner child can be scared by that. And so it's also not taking care of the inner child, which is really what's needed. Then there's this hero or parentified inner teenager, that kind of rescuing, over-responsible part of ourselves. And parentified, if that's a new term for you, it just really means being put in a parental role as a child, either with your parents, so counseling them, listening to them, being a confidant, or being put in charge of siblings. And this part of us might have become overly responsible in reaction to the chaos in our home, in our dysfunctional home, to the abuse or whatever, trying to fix it. Let me go into action mode. Also, this is the part of us who maybe just when we were back as teenagers thought, you know, like, no thanks, I don't want any help from my parents because that's not going to help. But really underneath might have felt this sense of sadness of, well, who's here for me? Where is the parent that's here taking care of me? I'm doing all this stuff and I'm alone. So there can be a lot of grief for all of these inner teenagers, but in this example, for that reason. They could be trying to save the family of origin and protect and take care of that inner child. They might go into problem solving, planning, fixing mode. They don't trust. This is a theme of not trusting. And the way that they're doing the fixing, it keeps the focus away from the wounded inner child. So another form of distraction. Again, the inner child still feels alone. The attention is focused outward. It's not on the inner child. There's no loving parent, really. They're taking care of the inner child when this part of ourselves takes over. This can also be very perfectionistic type of inner teenager. Just to give an example, so my inner teenager used to go into fixing mode with my mother. You know, she would talk about things. I'd try to fix and solve her problems. And I kind of came to recognize that was my inner teenager who was trying to fix my mother so that she would finally be available for my inner child. And, you know, that was perpetuating that sense of not being good enough. My inner child didn't have the sense of being good enough for my mom. So my inner teenager was going to try to fix the situation. And then the last example we're going to give is this inner teenager who feels hopeless, despondent, and they're not really in touch with the anger directly. It gets more shut down. So they might be seeking out addiction. They might have addiction to excitement, seeking out pleasure, things to fill that emptiness inside. They might use substances to numb their feelings. Numb the feelings of the inner child. And they might have tried to do or say something at some point, but were shut down. Or whatever they did really didn't make anything change. So they just kind of felt hopeless and gave up. So the way that they try to protect the inner child through distraction or numbing, again, it doesn't really solve the issue. And it tends to activate the critical parent who's then judging, and then the cycle can repeat. You know, we have this the critical parent judging. To relieve that judgment, we might, I'll just say for myself, go eat chips and salsa. And then the critical parent comes back to judge, then the inner child feels sad again. So it's just these cycles, and to get out of that cycle, we can have a loving parent step in so that there can be the nurturing, and then it gives the inner teenager a break. This isn't their job to solve these issues. So let's go ahead and first, let me see how I want to do this. I think the first way I'd like to do this is open the chat. Like, before we open the chat, here's the invitation. think about which of these patterns you relate to as the one that shows up the most often. And then I'll invite us in the chat to kind of respond to those different ones. So for instance, let's go ahead and open the chat. And if you relate as the primary one to the rebellious, just write rebellious. And that'll give me a sense of where people are landing on that. Okay, actually it's fine to do it the way you're doing it, to just say whatever the name is, either rebellious, fixing, or shut down. That's really helpful. Okay, so it seems like a pretty good mix here. Yeah, all three. You might relate to all three. I certainly do. And it depends. It changes with time. Different situations can trigger different aspects of my inner teenager. Okay. And then I'd like to hear from, if you relate to the rebellious inner teenager, please raise your hand if you'd like to come on and share. We'll hear from a couple people just to get a couple different flavors of that. And let me see if I can choose people here. So I'm going to try to go with people who did not get a chance to share in the last workshop I did. So Seidel F, would you like to come on and share? Hopefully Seidel, can you? I'm going to stop my screen share so I can better see people.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So tell me what you related to about that inner teenager and kind of how it shows up for you.
I was like a hero in my family. I was the good teenager, the good child, and I did a lot for my parents. I had two sisters growing up, and one was a little older, one was a little younger, and I took care of kind of my younger sister. And my father had depression. My mother was mentally ill. So, you know, I felt bad for my father because my older sister would act out.
Just real quick, Sardell. Which inner teenager pattern did you relate to the most? Is it the hero one?
Yeah, I believe so. Okay. Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about how it shows up for you in your experience now?
I try to be the responsible one, taking care of paying bills, trying to take care of my apartment, doing laundry. And I also have a mental illness as well. And it's been really challenging because I fall apart, you know, like I can't maintain this. It's not an image. I'm trying to live my life the best of my ability, but like I have trouble in relationships very much so. And I don't know how to deal with other people's issues. I have a really hard time. Sure. And I try to stay grounded. It's very difficult for me.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. Well, that's great. That's great. Thank you. I'm trying to get a sense of, in your experience, how do you relate to your inner teenager? How does she react? What I'm hearing you say is it's that over responsibility, trying to take care of things. And that's just a really wonderful thing to be aware of, because then when you notice that, it's possible to say, so is this my inner teenager? Is she doing something that she, am I acting out of something that I really need to do? Or is this something carrying over from the past? So it can just give us a little bit more choice to connect in. So thank you, Seidel, for sharing that. I think maybe she went back to mute. Okay. So I'd like to hear from, let me see, I see a bunch of different hands up, and I'm just going to pick on one more person. Rick, would you like to share about which pattern you relate to and how that shows up? What tells you that it's that part of you, the inner teenager? And you might be muted, Rick. I think you can unmute yourself.
Okay, yeah. My name's Rick. I'm an adult child.
Hi, Rick.
And thank you for running this workshop. And yeah, I definitely could relate to the rebellious. And the way that showed up for me in adulthood until very recently, even with 36 years of sobriety in AA and 11 years in ACA, was addicted to excitement. And that kind of came crashing down just almost a year ago. And it's been interesting not doing the things that I used to do to execute on addiction to excitement. And I didn't understand until now, even with all the work that I've done, that my inner teenager was actually protecting the younger children in the family. Boy, at what cost too? He went through so much trauma as a teenager, being rebellious, and other children as well. It's profound, just that awareness right now and listening to you.
Thank you for sharing that. I definitely appreciate when there can be compassion for their good intentions and the grief of the cost. It is a big cost. And it's our chance now to reclaim this part of ourselves and help them heal. And it's a beautiful part of our journey. So thank you, Rick.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's see, who else? Maybe somebody who hasn't had a chance to share. Esther, would you like to come on?
Hi.
Hi, Esther. Can you, I heard you for a second and then you're muted again. I think you might have to unmute.
How about now?
Yep.
Okay, hi. Thank you so much for doing this. And I'm Esther, I'm an adult child and a survivor. And what came up for me was, well, first of all, I guess I relate to all of them, but I relate most to being the fixer and the confidant and the, you know, the cohort, the mother's little helper.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, I don't have my video on. I related because it's been coming up a lot lately that in other fellowships, because I don't so much attend, that I just started attending this fellowship. I attend so many. People wanting information from me, like I have, I didn't get to be a kid. I didn't get my needs met. And, you know, what should I do about this? What should I do about that? I'm 5, I don't know, or I'm 13 and I want to go play. And I have no idea what you should do about my little brother or your husband. And these are not things I have any experience with. And the same thing, being like the GSR for the World Service Conference before I have a sponsor or I'm working my own program or people asking for and I'm learning to set boundaries and just say, hey, you know, it's really flattering. And if I could do something quick, just, I need to set time limits on things.
Yeah.
And I need to take care of myself first. I can't be, you know, helping other people, even if they think I have it together. And I notice like people want relationships. That's great that they want relationships with me, but I have to think about what, you know, what does my little person need who didn't get my need met as a child even?
Right. Right.
Is that in recovery? No.
Yeah. No, I hear you. I hear you. I'm with you, Esther. I really am. I love that because what you're pointing to is, again, the cost that Rick was talking about before, the cost of that wounded inner child not being tended to adequately. And then we have these behaviors, like, for instance, from the inner teenager coming and maybe overextending or doing different things that don't resolve that issue for the inner child. And it's true. You do deserve all that stuff that you give to other people. So it's, I love that that's an awareness, and I wish you all the best with the boundaries. And the teenager, connecting with the teenager, will help you set those too.
Or being the age that I am, being present and current in my body where I am. I'm not a mirror. I'm not a sounding board. I'm a human being.
Yeah.
You know, and I have as much of a right to be here and just be. And I'm not here for you.
Yeah. And that's okay. That's that codependency that I was talking about, which is part of the inner teenager pattern too. So we're working at it, and I really appreciate you sharing that aspect of it. Thank you, Esther.
Thanks.
Okay. I'm going to go back to sharing the screen, and I just want to also look at the chat. I'd like to stop the chat, but also see some of the comments that people said. The hero shows up as feeling like I have to be the smart one to learn and know everything, to take care of and fix my loved ones, constantly trying to learn and teach everyone and give unsolicited advice. Whew, if you can relate to that, it's like, just take that in. That's a lot of pressure. See if I can scroll through and see others. But this, I feel like hero mode is my main mode, but upon disappointment, I become angry and will burn out into shutdown mode. So we can see, that's wonderful. We can see this flow of how they're all related. Okay, well, thank you so much, everybody, for sharing. And, I see. I want to share about this because we didn't talk so much about this type of inner teenager, but the numbed out and checked out. Yeah, maybe there to protect the inner child, but not present for the emotional experience. Exactly. So we're not attending to the thing we need to attend to. And to also be gentle, because sometimes we need to see these patterns over and over again, and it's very painful. We might see ourselves reaching for whatever that behavior or substance is and know, whoa, I really should stop and take care of this part of me who's hurting, but the momentum can be so strong that we're just in it. So for me, that really requires a lot of being gentle with the loving parent, not judging it, remembering we can move on and keep practicing new ways. So that's been really key for me. Okay. I'm looking at the time, so I'm thinking, as much as I would love to hear from more people, I'm going to move us along and share the screen again. So the interesting thing here is that even though these patterns seem different, they really are a way of relating to anger. Like, they're related to anger and they're how we relate to anger. So for example, being more in the shutdown or the fixing mode might mean maybe we're more often on the laundry list. So we're afraid of angry people and authority figures. We might be afraid to become somebody angry and judge ourselves. There might have been a lot of judgment in our family. Some of the things I jotted down were, it's not nice to be angry, or people don't like you if you're angry. And then there's cultural baggage too about being angry. Then we can deny our anger. My husband used to say, when I would ask him if he was angry, I'm not angry. And he admits himself, he's like, I was angry. I just couldn't access it. And there are good reasons we couldn't access it, because we're very kind. Meaning not kind, sorry. It wasn't okay to access it at that time. I would also say this image with Yoda. We can be the loving parent like this, in that we can be gentle. Rather than judging the anger, we can just, maybe, are you feeling angry, inner teenager? What's happening for you? I get it. I can see that you're really upset. Rather than you are angry, we can just, anger is arising. You have anger. Okay, so one thing I'd say about relating to anger is it's when it happens, to see if it's possible to be curious. Because when we resist anger, it's almost this additional level of complexity. So if you just take your fist for yourself and just to experience this, take your fist and then hold your other fist against it, sorry, like this. And so if one of our hands is anger and the other hand is this one doesn't like anger or thinks there shouldn't be anger, just notice as you're pushing against and you just feel that. So when anger arises, if we're resisting it, then it can feel like this. And now notice what happens when you take the hand away that resists. And just feel the difference. Okay. So we can allow the anger to be there and support our inner teenager to not lash out, to not do behaviors that harm other people, but give them the space to have that feeling. Okay, so there's a comment in the chat that I just want to check out. Okay. Okay, yeah, and you know, whatever your experience is, if you're feeling triggered right now, if there's something that's not working for you about the material, I would suggest how can you be with whatever is that experience? Can there be a sense of curiosity, a sense of openness, remembering too that we're powerless, you know, you don't have any control of what I'm saying or sharing. So to just be with that experience, it can be very hard to be in those situations. So just want to say that. Okay, so I'd invite you, let's have an experience of working with anger together. And please do this at the level that feels comfortable for you. If it doesn't feel comfortable and it's too intense, maybe you just rest back and let the information flow past, but maybe don't engage as much as you feel like you should, just to do it in a way that's safe for you. Okay, so just invite you to think of a person who easily triggers your anger or your resentment or frustration, or if anger is uncomfortable, that triggers the shutdown or withdrawing. Or maybe, you know, this is someone around whom you get reactive, even if you're able to hide your reactivity. Maybe it's a family member, maybe someone you work with, someone in the community, but you find yourself around this person either trying to be right or to have them see you. Maybe you get sarcastic or judgmental, try to prove yourself to them. This might be someone who seems unable to see or respect you, or who doesn't follow through on their word. And if it's accessible, recall a specific time where you were with this person and felt those feelings. And if it's not accessible, just go with a general sense of being around this person. And then let's notice, what bodily sensations are you experiencing? As you think of that person or you recall that situation, maybe you have tightness or warmth. What's your breathing like? What emotions are here? Notice any desire to lash out or defend or say something sarcastic, even if that's only in your mind, And then notice where that comes from in your body. That might be connecting with the inner teenager. Mine often, I can tell she's active. I feel it in the center of my chest, like a burning and a heat, constriction. There can be this sense of a wave of energy wanting to come up. And this slide has just other examples of ways to tune into what's happening physically for you. So let's open the chat and just if you'd share a few things that you noticed about what it was like to recall this situation with someone that you felt angry about. What did you notice in your body? What were the bodily cues? What thoughts and feelings did you have? Yeah, I can see people are saying, I wanted to run, my eyes squint and my lips purse. Tightness in the center of the chest, stomach ache, nauseous, frozen. So we're getting to hear some examples of the different ways of relating to anger from the laundry list and the other laundry list. That's great. Boiling, clenching fists, want to swing a baseball bat. Yeah, you might see images as well as of having these feeling cues. You might hear thoughts, want to cuss everyone out and defend myself. Heart rate, clenched teeth. Yeah, that sense of being really just vulnerable, powerless. Shallow breathing. Yeah, that's great. So lots of noticing. Okay, let's go ahead and close the chat again, just temporarily. Thank you for sharing. Really helpful to see what you're experiencing. And the thing about the inner teenager is it can be helpful to connect to what's underneath the anger. You know, for me, the anger or that flavor of resentment, the different feelings that might come up with the anger, the annoyance, frustration, rage, that can be a way that's there's maybe fear, overwhelm, hurt, sadness, other emotions that can come from the inner teenager, but also the inner child. So those are helpful to know. And as you think about that person in the situation that you had before, what might your inner teenager be trying to protect the inner child from? They might tell you. Because the inner teenager's anger can serve as a shield for that inner child's more tender feelings. So Jen, just opening the chat again, just curious, anybody get any sense of what the inner teenager's trying to protect the inner child from in that situation? Grief, shame, sense of being rejected, unworthy, hurt, annihilation, being ignored, yeah. Invisible, not being heard. Yeah, so some of the needs we were talking about earlier too are coming up here. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, thank you everybody. So we'll pause there with the chat. And how do we then tend to the inner child's anger in a way that's loving and kind? Well, we can first notice it. So by doing the practice that we just did, noticing how we feel physically, what kind of thoughts we're having, it's really helpful. It's been helpful in my situation to identify the inner teenager's anger. To identify the anger as the inner teenager's anger, because what that allows me to do is it allows me to then tend to that part of myself rather than the anger just free floating. And then also just giving space. You know, I'm thinking about myself as a teenager. Think about yourself as a teenager. What would you have needed when you had all the complicated feelings you had? A lot of us didn't get the space that we needed. We were either judged or told to move on, or just ignored, not seen. So just for yourself, for a moment, what would you have needed? You know, if our face, my mom used to say, oh, stop looking so grumpy. It would have been much more helpful to just be seen, noticed, and not have comments. Maybe our inner teenager just needs silence and empathy too sometimes. The other thing that can help with the anger is to really nurture and take care of that inner child, because then the inner teenager isn't needing to react and defend, because that inner child feels safe and secure within your own loving parent. You know, like, you're enough. Let's not project. Let's not personalize what that person said. I see you. I love you. And you're enough. We don't need to prove ourselves to anybody. We don't need to give our power away. Like, we're okay today. And this is a share from the guidebook where someone's talking exactly about the situation where the anger was difficult for her. And her inner teenager was yelling at her, calling her names, and she had to take breaks so that she could come back with her loving parent there to hold that space. But it was eventually possible. The thing to keep in mind is that we didn't get a lot of skills for dealing with anger or feelings in general from our dysfunctional homes. So to give ourselves a break and realize we're learning, it just takes time. And if your inner teenager does react towards you, see if it's possible not to personalize. Just allow them to say what they're saying, empathize the best you can, and let them be where they are. It's really what we would have needed. Okay, so let's go ahead and I'm gonna ask to hear from a few people on what you noticed working with anger there. You can share about what is your relationship to anger, what connections you're making between your inner teenager and anger, and also how might you support your inner teenager when they feel angry. And I just ask too that we stay focused on this rather than going into details about our family of origin and stuff like that. That's all important, but really to stay focused here. So let me see who. Shannon, would you like to share? And you might be muted.
Hi, thank you.
Hi, yes.
My relationship to anger in certain situations, it varies a little bit. I have a work relationship where, with a supervisor where I really struggle to express it. And it's interesting that that person also comes from a family where there was addiction. And sometimes this workshop has been so helpful in like the fist exercise, making me realize the value of it. It wasn't a feeling that was, you know, supported in me, encouraged in me growing up. Yeah. And I'll answer the second one. And then, I think that this is a great intro for me to start doing more work with my inner teenager, and kind of, flesh out the relationship between inner teenager and anger, because I think it was a really tough time in my life, so that there's a fair amount to kind of unwind there, but I'm really getting a great start here.
Great.
Yeah, and the space, to just touch the last thing, this space, that was a great point of insight that you added, like teenagers want space. I actually work with teenagers. Job. And so, yeah, I will use that too. Thank you.
That's great. Thank you, Shannon. Good. Wishing you all the best with your discovery.
Thanks.
Okay. How about Francisco G? Let me see how I can get you to be able to share. Okay, Francisco, would you like to come on?
Yeah, well, thank you very much. Thank you for the talk. For me, anger and the teenager, like, it was helpful to know it's a secondary emotion. And I also have a very, very, very responsibility towards my inner child of integrity. You mentioned the integrity, the inner teenager also wants to live in integrity. So it's like listening and expressing that, you know, that is just, you know, that's living in integrity, saying, you know, what I feel. And obviously you made the clarification of not doing it from a lashing out point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just feel that just communicating it is, you know, just very simple. The principle of not suppressing my feelings like I did before recovery. So that's what I wanted to say.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. And that's a really important point, because we want to give space to the feelings in a healthy way and let them know it's whatever you're feeling is okay. You can express that safely to me and I'll handle it with that person. Because the inner teenager isn't equipped to deal with people in a healthy way. They just didn't learn what they needed to learn. So I'm glad you experienced that. Thank you for sharing. Okay, Natalia, would you like to share?
Hi, Natalia, ACA.
Hi, Natalia. Oh, you might have gone back on mute.
Yeah, it kind of kicked me out for a minute. So I kind of have a really bad issue with rage, and I identify a lot more with the other laundry list. Mm-hmm. And this makes me realize why. Mm-hmm. I feel like my inner teenager is absolutely like probably driving the bus 75, if not 80 or 90% of the time. I'm not able to access my inner child yet, and that would make sense why. And what I'm connecting it to is just like with my ex-husband, I was just in constant rage, like constant, like completely being the rebellious teenager with him, all those things you listed. And I just didn't understand why. I still don't understand why it comes out with him more than anybody. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's because he was my main attachment, like my parents. Mm-hmm. But it does come out in relationships, and mostly I haven't been able to figure out how to support my, because I don't know how to always deal with my anger, because it's so over, like it's rage, like it's more than anger, it's rage. And so I guess I just liked what you said about what you just said, like I hear you, I hear that you're angry, and I'm gonna deal with this. Because usually I would make no differentiation between me dealing with it and them, or the inner teenager.
Yeah.
And then I get in a lot of trouble. Yes. Like I was just fired. So there you are, prime example. So I really appreciate this. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Natalia. And that's such an important point. There's some exercises in the guidebook that support letting that anger out. Some of it is like, for example, writing a letter where you just let everything out from the inner teenager. It's the inner teenager writing it. There's no censoring. Just go, just even pressing hard on the paper if you need to. We have some other examples. Like sometimes I like to pound my fist on the bed. Stuff that's safe, but I don't really like to break things or get too loud and crazy. But one thing that can help too is just from my belly, almost growling, not yelling, but just allowing that kind of primal rage to be there, but safe. And we're all going to have different responses to this. For some people, those suggestions might seem very scary or unsafe. And that's totally okay. Just follow what's right for you. But if anger is a big deal and it's something that gets in the way of you having the kind of life you want to have, then finding safe outlets is really helpful.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, checking the time. So I have until 9:30, is that's correct, right? Yes.
Absolutely.
Okay, all right. I'd like to hear from one more person. Let's hear from Munti Munti.
Hi, my name is Munti. I'm new to ACA. I've done a little bit of child work, inner child work, a couple of years ago with my life coach. I was having trouble at work. And I can understand through this session why my inner child refused to come out. Mm. It was very difficult to connect to my inner child. And it makes so much sense to me. I wish I understood that I needed to work on my inner teenager. When it comes to anger, I was the hero. I was the good girl. I grew up in a dysfunctional family of many siblings. And one of them was very, very rebellious and very angry. She kind of created a sense of the whole family or the whole house is on fire. Mm. So my parents were always tending to the fires that she was creating. So I took the role of the hero and the fixer. Yeah. However, in my adult life, I am realizing that the rebellious teenager is coming out in almost all of my, like, especially finances, for example. I refuse to pay my bills. Mm. I do not understand why. I have the bill in one hand, the money in the other hand, and I refuse to pay it. Mm. And I never understood why. And this is so, like, it's touching my heart that I'm getting answers. It makes so much sense why I had so much defiance.
Yeah.
I was angry and I didn't know I was angry because I was told to be the good girl and I took the role of the good girl because I couldn't be angry and everyone's angry. There's nothing could have been done if I took the role of the rebellious teenager at that time. So I feel like there's a part of me that needed to become rebellious later on in life and it's affecting me so much, but I am very hopeful that I'm finding the answers right now. And, right now, I am allowing myself to be angry. The way I'm supporting my inner teenager is I'm listening to anger more. I am not shutting it down. And I just did that a couple of days ago with a friend. I felt very angry by something she did. Mm. And I immediately addressed it. And I told her, I felt betrayed by what you did. And I've never said that word before to anybody. I always sugarcoated my anger or my upset or my disappointment. But I just addressed it and it was another kind of example of setting boundaries, but also allowing my feelings to be felt and heard.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Wow. Welcome. I'm really glad to hear what you've discovered. And I can so relate to being the good child and the hero child and then having that rebellion come out in things like, wait, why? Why am I not doing that? So I love that you're curious about it. And it sounds like you're really on the path to having a good relationship with your inner teenager.
Yes, I am.
May that be so. Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. Well, thank you, everybody. That was really helpful to hear. One thing I wanted to go back and say is the person who came on talking about that anger coming out with their partner, that I can so relate to that. I used to threaten my partner to leave. I've been with my husband for 27 years, married for 23. But I would get into these rages when we would have a fight or a disagreement, or I had the sense he didn't hear me or was emotionally unavailable. I think now that I understand it, it was my inner child's fear of abandonment and then my inner teenager coming in with the rage. And that was just the way that it worked for me. So I think that getting to know that inner teenager I was able to say, whoa, we're in a committed relationship. I get that you're angry, you're trying to protect that scared one. Whew, let's just take a breath. It's going to be okay. And no matter what happens, I'm here, I've got you, and I've got the little one. It's going to be okay. Oh, so how do we tend to this part of ourselves? It's going to sound different than the inner child. Just like we would be speaking to a teenager in the world, we want to match the language. And, you know, teenagers and our inner teenager have a really good radar for fakeness. So, or not telling the truth. So they don't want lip service. They want action. It can help really to appreciate them. I know how hard you've been working. You've been working this whole time and it was never your job. I'm so sorry. Can see how they're trying to help us. You know, wow, you really don't want that little one to feel like that. And you know what? They have those feelings from a long time ago and I'm gonna be here to support them. It's okay now to do that. You don't have to distract. But I do see what you're trying to do and how that you're trying to help. When another part of us takes over our awareness and we might act out of our critical parent or inner child, people please, do things that aren't so great for us, we can make amends to the inner teenager. We can let them know, I'm so sorry that no one was there for you. And I'm sorry that I haven't been there for you. I'm really working on becoming more and more aware and having that loving parent more in the driver's seat. So I hope you can be patient with me, but I'm really working on it. And to just be authentic and sincere with them, even letting them know, I'm not going to do always a great job at this, but I do want to do a good job. I do care about you. And I'm working on some old patterns and habits that are hard to let go of. In the guidebook, we talk about the loving parent serving these functions of protecting, nurturing, guiding, and supporting. So that goes for the inner teenager too. It just sounds a little different. For mine, usually I don't need to say a lot, letting her know, I get it. I really get it. You want to say things, you want to do stuff right now, and I totally understand. You have every right to be angry. It's okay to feel that. I'll go and deal with the situation. It's not your job. You can take a break. You can relax. I've got it. And helping them with the distorted thinking, letting them know this is not back then. This is different. This isn't personal. Mine really gets upset about people's behavior sometimes and takes it personally. And I need to let her know that's about their behavior. It's not about you. It's not about us. We don't need to give our power away. And equanimity can help us, practicing the steps, especially steps 1 through 3, recognizing the powerlessness, having more balance and space inside so that I can be aware and connect with that part of myself. Just going to check if there's anything I had in my notes here. Yeah, I do really find that it's valuable to connect to the inner teenager's anger as the inner teenager. In meditation, we call it disidentifying. When we get identified with a thought, then we can suffer. But when we can separate that anger out as, oh, this is my inner teenager's anger, sometimes it's the inner child's anger. But whatever part of us is angry, then our loving parent can tend to them. And that can help us have more space to be with it. The reparenting check-in is a great way to tend to the inner teenager. And if you don't know about that, there's some information on the AWC schedule under the intro to the Loving Parent Guidebook. There's access to the worksheets there, and we'll put some in the chat later as well. But the key thing really is to make sure that we're nurturing and protecting the inner child so the inner teenager doesn't need to go on the defensive, doesn't need to shut down. And boundaries, as a teenager myself, I didn't like boundaries, but I needed them. And that's the same for the inner teenager. When we're working with boundaries for the inner teenager, it's really important to empathize with them and really understand where they're coming from in whatever reaction they're having before we set a boundary. So for example, in the guidebook, there's someone who talks about being in a step study group. And one of the step study members is saying things that are passive aggressive. And this person's inner teenager wants to say, hey, you're in recovery. That's passive aggressiveness. You should know better. Change. So if that person simply says to the inner teenager, we're powerless over other people, let's let it go. Well, they don't have a sense of being heard. They don't have a sense of what they're trying to accomplish by speaking out. So we really want to empathize first and then let them know, wow, okay, I see how angry you are, how upsetting that is. I also see how you're trying to protect the little one who's taking that personally. And you know what? That's not personal. We are powerless over what that person's saying. If I need to have a boundary with them, I will speak up for us. You can relax. Because if we just jump to the boundary, they might have this sense that their means of taking, means of protecting the inner child are taken away, almost like a spiritual bypass or something. So that's been an important piece, is that there's empathy first. The other thing is, chapter 13 in the guidebook has a lot around setting internal boundaries that will help you. The other thing about boundaries is it's part of our wounding. We might have had either too loose, too rigid, or a confusing mix of the two in our home, the type of boundaries. And somebody, a researcher, looked at this, and people who grew up with no boundaries actually felt a lot more shame than people who grew up with rigid boundaries. And the sense was, oh, my parent didn't care for me. So we don't want to repeat that with our inner teenager. We really want, even if they don't seem to want boundaries, we want to give them loving boundaries to support them. And just the key is really that we're having the loving parent in the driver's seat, so they're not driving the bus. And these external boundaries, if we think of external boundaries as just being honest, well, that's much more possible the more our loving parent tends to our inner family members, and then we can operate in the world as a healthy adult person who can say the truth and doesn't need to people please. And care for ourselves, to see boundaries as a way to take care of ourselves. Let me see if I can come up with, I had a couple examples here for you of boundaries. One example would be as an internal boundary with the inner teenager. Let's say there's a project or homework or something that needs to be done, and the inner teenager doesn't want to do it. So one way of having a boundary would be first to connect. Oh, I see you really don't want to do that. That does not seem fun. You'd really much rather kick back, watch a show, have something to eat. So is there something that would make this a little bit less awful for you? Or it could be simply, you don't have to do this. You can kick back and relax, and I'll take care of this project. It's just another way. And in the guidebook, we have these affirmations and meditations at the end of every chapter. And I'm not going to read this, but I just wanted to put it up on the screen for you to see that there is this beautiful benefit of connecting with the inner teenager. The more that they trust our loving parent and know that we're going to take care of boundaries and be true to ourselves, then we really do have this sense of knowing who we are and what we want, and we have our loving parent to help us get it. We can have a voice for ourselves and do it in a way that's not the way we might have done it as teenagers, but from a healthy place. So that's the end of what I have to share with you all. And I'm gonna just open it up for questions, comments. I'm trying to get this screen share off. Stop the share. It's 9:24, so I could offer two things. People could just come on to share. I can also show you a few things of the guidebook that's going to be coming out toward the end of July, August. So maybe in the chat, if you could just say, if we could open that chat again. Anybody have a preference if you want to see stuff on the guidebook, or you just want to be able to share about the inner teenager? Okay, looks like guidebook is clear winner. So I'm going to go through that and I'll zoom through that. Okay, so the Loving Parent Guidebook, I had this up at the beginning, but I'll put it at the end because I know some people join later. So coming mid-July, early August this year, finally here after 3.5 years of really solid development, lots of involvement from different adult children, a labor of love, and we hope it's really going to serve recovery in ACA and beyond. And it's available as, it's going to be available as spiral-bound book. And these are the prices, 14 at adultchildren.org, 18 at Amazon. The Kindle ebook will be $11.99. There's going to be different international launch date, and that'll be announced once it's decided what that will be.
I'm back and available if you need me, my name's David.
Okay, thank you, David. Is there anything you'd want to say about that, about the launch? Or?
Yeah, we're going to be right at the end of July, and it'll be... it looks like we have our ducks in a row, so it'll be available at the same time internationally.
Oh, cool.
And it's going to come out in the Traveler. It's going to come out in Smoke Signals and everything else we can do. And so that people will know. But we really look at right toward the last weekend in July. It's been a huge undertaking, and, the devil's in the details. But, yeah. It looks great, and all indications are actually worldwide would be available at the same time. We're within a week or so of each other, sure. Including the Kindle. So
that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Yeah. That's exciting. It has been in with the printer for a while, and it just takes the time it takes. That's one thing I've learned working on this project.
Yeah.
We're all volunteers, and the printers are busy, just like everyone else is busy with COVID. So to be patient and know that when it comes, you'll have something you can practice for the rest of your life. And in terms of the reparenting check-in materials, there's a link here on the slide. You can find it on the Loving Parent Guidebook page. You'll also find a list of reparenting check-in meetings if you want to start to practice connecting with your inner child and teenager and really feeling that loving parent. You'll find it in the intro, under the intro, that download that I mentioned. So the Loving Parent Guidebook is in what we're calling fellowship review mode. So it's just like a regular book that you would purchase. It's going to have a little bit different logo. It'll say fellowship review mode. Basically, it's gone through a lot of evaluation processes. And for the next 1 to 3 years, the fellowship will use it, give comments through an online form, and then we'll go back and incorporate that feedback and make it as good as we possibly can and as accessible as we possibly can and move it on to the board for eventual offering it to an annual business conference so we can get ACA conference approval. So that's the kind of trajectory. Testimonials, just to get you excited. We've had a lot of really positive feedback. This person read the whole book and said that basically it's giving concrete information on how to embrace the solution. And it's providing practical instruction on how to reparent. And that was the goal. We wanted it to be practical. Another person, this was one of our goals, was to be gentle and embracing. And they're saying they were impressed with the sensitivity, care, strength, and power of the book. And then this one, of course, I love, says, all ACA literature is important in adult child recovery. However, this may become the most important single piece of our literature suite. And that's from the Literature Strategic Planning Committee and Lit Eval co-chair, Greg, who sees a lot of literature. What's inside? Well, the book is structured to help you awaken the loving parent, meet these different inner family members, and then learn to tend to them. So in part one, you get this foundation. In the next part, you're learning skills like how to have internal boundaries, how to understand and connect with feelings and needs, and basically grow your reparenting skills. And then you'll be really nurturing and supporting your inner family through grief work and deeper connections with them. And in the last chapter, we're learning what's a typical day like if we have a loving parent in the driver's seat. And that's just a beautiful example, along with some practical tools that you can use and graphics to help you remember what those tools are. It includes all of these things, shares that are relevant to the section that they're in. We try to provide examples of what a loving parent would say so that you can start to develop, your loving parent voice, since a lot of us didn't hear these kind of messages. There are a lot of activities for you to do. 8 new guided practices. We have some sample meeting scripts, and we'll have more that are available online. And the images that are in the guidebook are set up so that you can color them in. So we try to make it friendly to the inner child. And then a link for additional tools that will be made available as they're developed and approved. And those will be just done online. For example, there's a loving parent guidebook. I call it LPG groups, how to do those groups, how to work through the book in groups, some suggestions and best practices for that. This is just to show you, Taylor did this slide. She's our creative director on the art team. And this is to give you a sample of the different art and the elements that are in there to try to support you to both be gentle with yourself, to remember the loving parent's nature of kindness, and to help you pause, just different ways to connect. And then this should say, when do I start the guidebook? Basically, if you're at the beginning of your ACA journey, first of all, it's really up to you. It's what works for you, but to help you have some things to help you decide. If you're new, maybe you would do the whole guidebook. Or maybe you would just do part one, which is setting that foundation, and then go into the yellow book with a stronger foundation for your loving parent, which is so important in the steps. And then returning to the latter parts of the book after that. If you have already gone through the steps, you could do that at any time. We do recommend possibly starting the reparenting, the guidebook before the laundry list, just to really ground and have that loving parent there, because the laundry list stuff can be quite analytical, I would say. You're kind of thinking a lot. So to make sure you have balance and are grounded also in the emotions. Again, this can be used one-on-one with a fellow traveler or sponsor, like a co-sponsor or sponsor. It could be that you do this in a group. And one thought that we had that would maybe support people is these groups can last quite a long time. I was in a laundry list traits workbook group, I think for about 2.5 years. That was a big commitment. So not everybody will be able to commit to that length of time or want to for whatever reason. It might not be where you are emotionally. So one way to do this would be just to focus on part one of the guidebook in a group, because it is intended to be used with other people. It was not envisioned, and we don't recommend going through it by yourself, doing everything by yourself. This is really a we program. We need each other. We were alone in childhood, but we're not alone today. So doing it with others in part one, and then maybe some people will continue on in parts 2 and 3 in that same group, but others who need to step out can do that. I'm working on a 12-week sample curriculum for part one so that would support people. And another way that you can use the Loving Parent Guidebook is to practice what's in the book by going to these check-in meetings and practicing with the inner family members there. You can also do it in a regular ACA meeting, just pulling in the, how am I feeling right now? Which part of me is triggered? Which part of me needs some love and attention? Which part of me is celebrating? Another way to use it would be to just set up an ACA literature meeting, just like we go to meetings that read the Red Book. So you would go through that. Some of those meetings might decide, you know what, we're just going to focus our meeting on part one. Other meetings could evolve that maybe look at mindfulness and feelings chapters or grief work. There's 22 chapters, so there's so many ways it could be used. And these are the additional, we're going to be offering these additional resources on the landing page. If you go here now, it's blank. So just keep that in mind. But we are working on it. And the idea is, this is a place that's referenced in the book. So you'll have the link in the book and you can go and check out new things as they evolve. And probably we're going to be getting wonderful feedback from the fellowship and then developing additional resources from that. So that is truly all I have. And it's 9:36. I think there's 4 minutes if anybody has any questions.
Hi, Bonnie. This is Kathy. We received a message in the chat. I believe somebody would like you to hold up the front of the guidebook again.
Only I had it in person. Wait, maybe.
Okay, or a slide that shows the cover.
I have
lots of questions about pre-order. When can that happen?
It won't be pre-ordered. There was too many difficulties to get it done, unless, because it's going to be not till the end of July, so we really can't do that. So
I wish we could. I wish we could build on your excitement, because I know it's exciting. But
Bonnie, could you say something again about the slides that somebody could look at in the meantime?
What do you mean?
The slides from this presentation today.
You know, I would need to check with the literature committee. Some of these images are not ACAWSO. They were offered by somebody who worked on the project. Yes. I also don't want to take away from you getting the guidebook.
Understand.
Although David might have some thoughts about that. The other thing I would say is there'll be a recording of this. So if you miss some of it, you can find it at the adultchildren.org shop. I'm sure I will also be presenting this again, and other people from my team might be presenting this at some point, even possibly before the book comes out. So any other questions?
There are a number of people with their hands up, but I don't know how much time you would have for that. I think we have maybe a couple more minutes before the next team comes in.
Okay. Yeah, that might be a little tricky to start a question.
Actually, I think the next person is ready. It would be David to do the transition.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, everybody. And
thank
I wish you
so much, Bonnie.
All the best with your inner teenager. Yes, thank you.